This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow.
We have all been anticipating, maybe bracing, for the Biden-Trump rematch this year.
But maybe this won't be a straight-up rematch after all.
Raise your hand if you knew there was something called the Natural Law Party in Michigan. I did not.
My hand is raised, but I'm also not normal. Let's be clear about that. Yes, there has long been a minor party in Michigan called the Natural Law Party that in essence has a platform of, can we all just get along? Not surprisingly, its candidates have won exactly zero offices at the state and federal level in Michigan. But suddenly, it's a player of sorts here in 2024.
That's right. The Kumbaya Party, as I will now be calling them, out of nowhere. The Michigan chapter of the party announced it had nominated Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as its candidate for president. If this holds up, and we should note a challenge is expected, it would put the insurgent Kennedy, nephew of the former president, noted anti-vaccine activist and insurgent who has agitated Democrats and now increasingly causing some wonder among Republicans, in the role of spoiler for Michigan's 15 electoral votes. This guy's causing all kinds of chaos.
That's right. Kennedy will not win Michigan. That we know. However, third-party candidates can decide who does win. Shayna, remind us what happened in 2016.
Ah, yes. 2016. That was, what was that, 50 years ago? 60 years ago? Something like that? You might remember that year. Minor party candidates like Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, most notably, combined for 5% of the vote for president in Michigan. And then Trump topped Hillary Clinton by a quarter of a percentage point. So 4 years later, the third party share of the vote dropped back to normal levels with Biden the clear beneficiary as he won the state by almost 3 points. So in a very tight race, these types of third party candidates make a huge difference. And we asked Detroit Free Press politics editor Emily Lawler about whether Kennedy's potential ballot presence is scrambling the presidential race here in Michigan. And here's what she said.
We're ripe for a third-party candidate mm-hmm. to gain some traction, right? Certainly, we saw, for instance, Jill Stein gain some traction in Michigan when she was on the ballot, particularly in 2016. You could argue that her presence there was decisive in our overall numbers and how the votes broke down. So, I certainly would expect to see way more interest in a third-party candidate this cycle than in some previous cycles. I think the challenge for RFKJ here is that you're not necessarily, it's not clear who he's pulling from. And I think that we'll probably spend a lot of ink and airtime on that in the next few months. I think that he's probably pulling some supporters from each side and sort of the proportionality will end up mattering a lot. And then the other thing is just ballot access. He is on Michigan's ballot or has been approved to be on Michigan's ballot. That's huge. We're a big swing state, obviously, but Michigan has relatively low ballot entry as compared to some other states. And I do sort of wonder what his prognosis is for getting on the ballot in all 50 states, which I do believe he's attempting.
In general, the assumption is that Kennedy will hurt Biden by peeling off the narrow band of Democrats unhappy with Biden and wanting to cast a protest vote. That creates the specter of a 2016 repeat that could allow Trump to win even if his vote share remains about 47.5%. That's what it was in 2016 and 2020.
But there's been some polling suggesting that Kennedy is actually starting to pull from Trump as well.
Polling for third-party candidate support is notoriously suspect, like almost worthless. Voters may tell pollsters they will vote for a third-party candidate. Far fewer actually do. That being said, Trump is starting to turn his fire on Kennedy a little bit, which suggests his campaign might see a threat.
We're going to discuss the latest on the presidential race and so much more in a moment with Detroit Free Press politics editor Emily Lawler. Make sure you stay tuned for that. We will be right back. Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Zach Orchow.
We are joined now by one of the great journalists in Michigan, and I'm not just saying that because she's a good friend, Detroit Free Press politics editor Emily Lawler. Emily, welcome to Mishmash.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, when Emily graciously agreed to come on the show, she said she was excited to formally be mashed. And we are going to have to copyright that, Emily. Emily,
I said people must say that, right?
It was the first I had heard of it, but I'm all for it. And we're going to start using that.
Perfect.
So, Emily, does the 2024 political year in Michigan feel similar to 2020 and 2016? Or does it feel like we're looking at something new, even with a third consecutive cycle involving Donald Trump?
I'd say something new. I kind of thought that the defining characteristics in 2016 and 2020 leaned more toward anger or toward being very concerned about the future of our country. I would say the defining condition of this election so far, with the people that we've spoken to, and the Free Press is making a really big effort to speak to a lot of people this cycle, seems to trend more toward apathy. People are very tired of having the same exact choices that they had in 2020. They're very tired of seeing Donald Trump on the ballot. I think that there are people who are not interested in engaging with politics in this current iteration. Granted, it is April. Nope, it is May. The months just changed. So I could eat my words and you could tell me I'm a giant dum-dum in November. But, you know, this far out, I think in 2020 and 2016, both, we were seeing more energy and a little bit more excitement about the realm of possibilities. I think the fact that either candidate, presumed candidate winning, having already served, is taking a little bit of mystery and hope out of the electorate.
Well, sort of jumping into that stew comes Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And this kind of feels like a classic April, now early May, story in a presidential campaign that gets a lot of attention, but by the summer could be nothing more than a footnote. But at this point, what does his potential presence on the ballot in Michigan in the presidential race mean in your mind?
Yeah. So the condition I just described should mean that we're ripe for a third party candidate mm-hmm. to gain some traction, right? Certainly we saw, for instance, Jill Stein gain some traction in Michigan when she was on the ballot, particularly in 2016. You could argue that her presence there was decisive in our overall numbers and how the votes broke down. So, you know, I certainly would expect to see way more interest in a third party candidate this cycle than in some previous cycles. You know, I think the challenge for RFKJ here is that you're not necessarily, it's not clear who he's pulling from. And I think that we'll probably spend a lot of ink and airtime on that in the next few months. You know, I think that he's probably pulling some supporters from each side, and sort of the proportionality will end up mattering a lot. And then the other thing is just ballot access. He is on Michigan's ballot, or has been approved to be on Michigan's ballot. That's huge. We're a big swing state, obviously, but Michigan has relatively low ballot entry as compared to some other states. And I do sort of wonder what his prognosis is for getting on the ballot in all 50 states, which I do believe he's attempting.
Well, and Kennedy has been in the sort of political atmosphere as a presidential spoiler for a while now, but it feels like the seriousness of his run has amped up. What do you think has changed since he first announced, hey, I'm throwing my hat in the ring for president?
I think his party affiliation, for one, right? So, you know, I think that definitely, I think people looking at the set of options who aren't satisfied are definitely looking for another candidate. And I would say that he's the biggest name out there right now. You know, if you're casting your glance around, that might be where your eyes are landing.
So last month in the Free Press's elections newsletter, you had an interesting note about how one of your reporters found news on the Detroit airport tarmac in March. What happened on the tarmac?
Yeah, so we had, you know, obviously the Free Press puts a lot of energy into debunking and pre-bunking. That's really something we've put an emphasis on, especially in the wake of 2020, when we saw so many questionings of, you know, election processes. And frankly, we just want to demystify things, right? So, yeah, elections are confusing, and there are a lot of situations that are pretty confusing. So, you know, what happened with that was Representative Matt Maddock had seen some buses, or I'm not actually clear if it was his picture or somebody else's, but he had tweeted a photo of some buses and said that they were full of illegal invaders. Those are his words. And, you know, there was sort of this presumption on his part that, you know, these were undocumented immigrants, that they were coming into Michigan. You know, other states have seen waves of undocumented migrants, of course, but it was not undocumented migrants. It was some very well-known basketball teams coming in for a sports tournament. So, you know, Arpan Lobo, a reporter on our team, really put in the legwork there to call around. And, you know, I won't say that sports contacts are our number one forte, but between the sports contacts and the airport authority and, you know, some other sources, we were able to piece together what had happened there.
You know, what was funny about that is one of my old state news colleagues at Michigan State University is now an editor at the Spokane Review, where Gonzaga is. And one of those teams' buses was kind of caught up in the swirl. And he was contacting me frantically to try to get me on the phone to talk to him about who Matt Maddock is and why he would do this. And I got a big chuckle out of that.
Yeah, you know, as far as why he would do it, I just, you know, it really, I don't think it's a secret that Republicans are counting on the border on being sort of a top issue for them this cycle. And I will say it's been coming up organically in some people that we've interviewed over the last month or two. So, you know, you wouldn't think that border issues would be necessarily at the top of concerns for a state that is this far away from the U.S.-Mexico border. Obviously, we're very close to the U.S.-Canadian border. But I do think that it is registering with a lot of people. A lot of people have some concerns there.
So, Emily, tell us about the Free Press's project to profile various counties in the state as part of its election coverage and why the newspaper decided to undertake that idea.
Yes, thank you so much for asking, because this is my favorite thing to talk about, and I have not been allowed to talk about it for a long time, and now that I am, I'm like a fountain. So at the beginning of, or kind of midway through last year, we were talking about sort of what had gone right, what had gone wrong off of the 2022 cycle, and Arpan Lobo on my team had said that he wants to get out and talk to more real people. I made him do probably, I don't know, dozens of pundit pieces where you call three talking heads and string together a storyline. And he was like, that's great, but I'd rather just talk to people who are out there in our communities than these three pundits that I'm calling all the time. And I said, that is a super fair criticism. I am a creature of Lansing. Arpan is not. He comes from a community newsroom. He was with the Holland Sentinel and now is with the Free Press. He's based in Grand Rapids. And so we kind of put together a framework of how we would do that in a constructive way. So what I came up with was, in partnership with the American Community Project, we identified eight Michigan counties that represent like sort of the eight different types and motivations of voters in Michigan. So some are things you would expect, like Wayne County is a big city and it's the only big city county in Michigan. Some of them are a little more unusual in terms of categories. So we have Schoolcraft County in the mix, and that's sort of representative of graying America, where it's sort of depressed in economic opportunity, obviously gorgeous area, I do want to say that, but they're having trouble keeping and having jobs for the young people that are being raised there, and sometimes, most times, it seems like moving away. So, you know, taking a look at communities through these sort of lenses of their experiences and what might motivate their votes in November is something that we're putting a really big emphasis on this fall.
So we never have a shortage of interesting races in Michigan politics. Emily, what race most intrigues you this year?
I want to do like all of them. I think if I had to pick my number one most, I have no idea what will happen race, it might be that Kill DC. So Saginaw County is actually one of our counties that we're focusing on as part of this Voter Voices project. And it's a fascinating county. It's trending more conservative, but has sort of served as a little bit of a bellwether, like gone back and forth between gubernatorial years and presidential years. But I would say overall, the trend is more conservative. However, it's been represented by not only a Democrat, but a Kildee in Congress for close to 40 years at this point. And I just wonder if taking that name out of the equation is enough to tip it into Republicans' hands. And I think it'll depend a lot on what happens at the top of the ticket. But I'm just watching that region really closely.
So I think there's probably two races in the Free Press's prime coverage area that interests us. First of all, can Sheree Tanidar win another term against several Democratic challengers hoping to oust him in the August primary? I am constantly fascinated by what is going on with Sheree Tanidar and his ability to just remain in Michigan politics in one way or another. Emily, what's the latest there?
Yeah, you know, Sheree is definitely making a very, very concerted effort to hang on to this seat. One of his big strengths last cycle was that he put in a lot of campaign time downriver. This district is part of the city of Detroit, the Points, and downriver. He put in a lot of time where people didn't focus, which was downriver. And he also has this story that I think resonates with a lot of people in a community that's largely underserved. You know, he really has a very impressive personal rags to riches life story that I think resonates with a lot of people in the district. So, you know, I would say his main challenger is Adam Ollier, who came in second to him last cycle and is up again. And there's a handful of other candidates, I think a total of four, that are potentially be on the ballot. And Sheree's trying to head that off at the pass. He has filed a challenge to Ollier's signatures, which could be a way to sort of stop this race before it even begins. If that challenge stands up, we'll see what the board of canvassers ultimately decide about who can appear on the ballot.
Well, and then there's the biggest Democratic regret of 2022, that they let John James win the congressional seat in southern Macomb County without a fight. Now there's a slew of Democrats hoping to get a shot at James as he seeks a second term. That includes the Democrat who lost to James very narrowly in 2022, Carl Marlinga. Will anything be different this time?
I really got the sense, and tell me if you got a different one, but yeah, in terms of the biggest Democratic regret last cycle, that ended up being the race that we were waiting the longest for on the congressional front. It was less than a half a percentage point apart from what I remember. And it really seemed the day after the election, in hindsight is 2020, and this is one of those things that just crystallized the day after. It really seemed like if Democrats had accidentally dropped $100 on the sidewalk there, they would have won, right? So I think that certainly they're not going to make the mistake of not investing in that district again. And I think, you know, Macomb County is obviously, it's a Macomb County-based district, obviously trended more conservative and trends very conservative, very Trump in presidential years. So I do think their best chance might have been that gubernatorial year. But looking at how close it is, I don't think there's any justification for not focusing some of their attention there.
Who are some of the Democrats in that race that are looking pretty good?
Well, number one, I'll say Carl Marlinga is back. He's the one who lost it by such a narrow margin last cycle. And then there's some other interesting faces, I think, coming from more the local government side. And, you know, I think that could be a pretty competitive primary.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that one is, again, the Democrats there seem to be really struggling to raise money. That's what prompted the National Democrats to abandon Marlinga 2 years ago, and I'd keep an eye on Dr. Anil Kumar, who doesn't really have any political base there, but seems potentially willing to spend north of $1 million of his own money, which could make him a big factor in that race, could be very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a self-funder is kind of prime for that district. And I do think that district's maybe more flexible than we give it credit for, especially on the third Trump run. Certainly, they come out strong for Trump. I also think that Macomb County is complicated enough that they may have different votes on lower ballot races.
So turning to the legislature, it seems like a classic second year of legislative term with one-party control is starting to develop, where the legislature starts to exert more independence from the governor. We also now have Democrats back in full force since their representatives who became mayors, they've now had their seats replaced by Democrats. So now they're, everybody's in full force. Everybody's swinging. The legislature is hopping. What are you starting to see over there?
I'm starting to see a lack of action on anything except the budget, which is the constitutionally mandated thing that they have to accomplish. So that's not really a huge choice, I would say. But, you know, obviously they got off to a slow start this year, not having those two votes you mentioned. They are back up to full strength, but I still don't really have a sense of what they're institutionally prioritizing. There have been sort of a mix of like different things passing different chambers and like, you know, an assumption that perhaps the other chamber will pick it up soon. Senate recently passed some elections changes that could be interesting. But I kind of struggle with the overall narrative. And I think maybe they're struggling a little bit, too, with that. You know, you look at things like the economic development legislation. They're just, you know, kind of competing ideas on how to overhaul the state's economic development process. And maybe that competition is more between the governor and the legislature than anything else. But, you know, I think that huge force of very, very impressive first 6 months of this session 2 years ago was so, or a year and a half ago, I guess, at this point, was just so much, so quickly. I don't think we'll see anything like that, is certainly until a new session starts. Well, I take that back. Lame duck? Question mark?
Oh, man.
Depending on how the balance of power goes, I could see that lame duck being an extraordinarily busy one. So
I'm already starting a donation of pizza for all of the reporters for lame duck this year. My goodness. I mean, I feel like, yes, depending on the balance of powers and what shakes out in November, but still, I'm very concerned about your guys' lame duck either way.
Well, I will take any snacks. So actually, that's, you know what? I'm moving to Detroit. I'll have to bring the snacks. You and I are going to have to be the snack brigade. Zach, we'll bring you snacks.
There you go. There you go.
Make that happen.
Emily Lawler, editor at the Detroit Free Press, thank you so much for joining us here on Mishmash.
Just politics editor, but thank you. Oh, thanks. It's great to talk to you guys.
Thanks again to our guest, Emily Lawler from the Detroit Free Press. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the fantastic Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's own Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin.
Additional production and editing by Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian.
Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can also subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. And learn more about Gongwer News Service at GONGWER.com.
Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give. We'll talk to you next week.